Okay, so it's November 8th. No, 9th. That's right, 9th. I was going to say 19th too today because I thought we were going to do 19, the 19th chapter of certain books. I thought 19, it must be November 19th, but it's the 9th. I can't read the date unless I highlight the window at which I'm looking. Yeah. There you see. Yeah. Unless I highlight this, it's hard to read it. But my eyes are actually improving at reading the very small font. I'm showing right here. November 9th, 2022, word green here, 1427 hours. I'm showing right here the eSword program running in VirtualBox on Apple Silicon, which is amazing to think that, or when we think, when we know how many people said, and I'm not saying it was anyone in particular, I'm not naming names, but how many people said that VirtualBox would never run on Apple Silicon. It just wasn't possible, or things to that effect, that it would not be ever, they would never write any port. That's what people said. They would never, they couldn't port it. Well, they wouldn't be able to port it. It couldn't just be ported, is what they said, but or you couldn't just translate it to run in that language because it was, and some people were correct in saying it would have to have an emulator. But how many people would have guessed that Oracle would have written, whoever wrote it for Oracle, I mean, I don't understand who did it either, but that someone would write an emulator. And you know, make it work on Apple Silicon by making the a native code, the program, putting it into the native code of Apple Silicon. It's crazy. I mean it's unlikely. I booted it yesterday. I think it took maybe, I forget the number of minutes. Maybe I wrote it down, but it's not consequential because I don't think I measured it exactly. Today, again, I forgot to look, but it was about 16 or 17 minutes before I looked, and it was running the eSword. That's just to boot the eSword. It takes 7 minutes to boot Windows XP, which is okay. I mean, I can do other things in the morning while I'm booting Windows XP. You know, those 7 minutes are gone quickly. Even the 17 minutes it takes to boot eSword, or less. I think it's quite a bit less, possibly, but it might be 17 minutes. That's still, I can still do things for 17 minutes in the morning, so it's not a big problem. I just wanted to show you, this is what it looks like, and I can magnify what you see. If you're running it normally on a normal monitor, these fonts will be bigger, but because I'm running it on this incredibly high resolution M1 Max MacBook Pro laptop screen, the 16 inch, it's just because it's, what is it, 3456 or 3345 by 22. What, let's get the resolution of that. Let's see. About this Mac. Here it is. Let's see. Can I drag this? Why not? I'm not dragging. Okay, there it is. Okay, good. Monterey. System report. That's not what I want. That's not what I want to run. I want to run that, but I want to see the system report. System report. Where is it? It's invisible. It jumped up behind something that I had always on top. There we go. Let's get this back up again. Okay, better. All right. So this is what happens. Display. Somewhere. Graphics. There it is. Graphics. This monitor's, oh, 3456 by 2234. It's a retina, liquid retina, XDR, 3456x2234. That's the display we're looking at right now. It's huge for a 16-inch monitor. So it makes the fonts look tiny because there's so many pixels crammed into such a tight space. Everything is too small to read. So I won't be using it on this platform, possibly, but I'll be using it on one of my other monitors that has a lot lower resolution. And the screens are much bigger, too. So it's everything's more legible. I just wanted to show what it looks like, but this is the important translation here. It's the Hebrew Old Testament, H-O-T, plus, meaning Strong's Concordance references are added to it. It's H-O-T, hot. Okay, really, it is really hot. Like, this is hot. And what you do is you click on this window that you want to scroll. Hopefully we can scroll it with the mouse, but maybe not. With the mouse wheel. Right now I'm trying to scroll. It's not scrolling. Okay, try now. It's not listening. Oh, it didn't highlight yet. Okay, it didn't even highlight the window yet. I'm trying to get this window. Look, it reacted in a very delayed manner, and then it did a lot of things, it's not supposed to do necessarily so much. Okay, now I've clicked on this window, have I, or not? Yes, now I can scroll with the mouse, apparently. It did the scrolling for me, and it got down to Daniel 9:27. Let's click on Daniel 9:26. That should highlight that. But it takes a long time. You see, this is how long it takes to run the simplest operations in some Windows programs, at least in this program, eSort. When it's running on VirtualBox on Apple Silicon, it's slow, okay? But it's not always slow. I think I can change Bible translations up at the top. Let's change to, if we had hot without the plus, what would it look like? There, see? It's fast. I can go hot with the plus again. And it, by the way, it doesn't have any references. You see, you can't click on any references. Now I click on this hot plus again. And there you go, all the references are there. So if I click on a reference, let's click on this reference, which we had before. I had clicked on it earlier today. It's the reference to the week, the number of the word week in plural. It's talking about the 62 weeks. After this, it says after 62 weeks. After 62 weeks in the New World Translation reference version, Messiah will be cut off with nothing for himself. So it is seven or a week, it means. In plural, it's weeks. So if I click on the next one, it's probably going to be, I imagine it's going to say 60, this one. Looks like it, right? You've got two S's there, right? Seven is Shebta or Shebua or something like that. Six is Sesa or something like that. Sesim, it says. Oh, the vowel is not determined, but I'm just going to click now to see what happens. This might take a little time, but this is how, when it's running at normal speed, it's very fast, and this is how you look up words in the Hebrew, in the Bible, to find out what they mean. There it is. So that didn't take extraordinarily long, but it took quite a while. So this is 60. Shishim. Or I said Sesim, whatever, you know. That was the idea. Same idea. So, after, this word means after, evidently. After, it starts with the letter A, which is the It's the Hebrew Aleph, which is the first letter of the alphabet in Hebrew, which is our, would correspond to our letter A, A. So it's not surprising that means after. It has, it even has an R in it. An R, Resh, which is this letter, that letter right there. So it's got A and R, like after. Our word after has, and it, that looks like it might even be a T. Tau looks a lot like that. I'm not sure if that is a T. Atra. I think it's, that says Atra, which is like after. It's similar to our word after. Shows the origin of English, which is from Hebrew, actually. A lot of English is from Hebrew, or probably all of the stem languages from which English came. Originally, those languages came from some language that came from Hebrew, or they came from Hebrew. It's possible. Akar, there it is. So it's a C, it's actually a CH, that letter, not a T, but it looks like the letter, the Ta, as well. It looks quite a bit like that in Hebrew. Yeah, the Hebrew letter for T looks not terribly different from that. So it's Akar. It means after. It sort of sounds like after, too, Akar. And then the letter that precedes the letter A there is the word for and, which is wa, the W, means and. And after. After the weeks, 60. And is the and again. That letter is the and. And then this letter must be 2. It must mean 2 if it's 62 weeks. 60 and 2. There it is. You can even just, you can just hover the mouse over top and you can get the meaning that way. It means second or two or twice. You don't have to actually click on it, so you can do a faster job that way. I can go to the next one. After the thousand, sorry, not thousand, this is thousand. After the 60 and 2 weeks, there was something about where am I? Is this the two? I don't know where I am anymore. Oh, I'm way up there. Okay. There's where I should be. I'm not sure where I was. We should be able to get... Oh, it's not... There it is. Okay. There's the two. 60 and two. And then we have this word. Oh, no. No, we didn't get... Okay, we've got to hover it. It's not reacting quickly to the hover. So it just takes a while, maybe. I'm not sure. There it is, the hover. It finally got the hover. After 60 and 2 weeks. It takes time, the hover. So now we have to wait for it again. Wait, what I could do is make this... What I need to do here... I'm going to go into my system preferences in Mac OS, okay? I'm going to go to accessibility. This is how you fix this. I'm going to go to the zoom, the magnifier, in other words. Picture in picture. Advanced. I think we go adjust size and location. So let's just make this bigger. So when we zoom, we can read up above. That's what we want. Okay. Okay. Bring this back. Over here, that's what we do. So now I can zoom here, and it will give me much higher point of reference. So I can try and get that word again. Let's hover that word. It takes a little while. See, it's very slow, but I don't mind because I'm. Otherwise, I'm in it. I have a tendency, or I'm in a state where I'm liable to try and do too many things. So slowing down is okay. Let's see. It's not listening to me. It doesn't know that I'm actually hovering. Oh, I didn't click on it. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't clicked on that program. It was still focused on the other program, the preferences I was running, right? I need to focus the window, then it will hover. Then when it hovers, it will tell me what that word is, hopefully, after it gets it. Does it know yet? No, it still doesn't know. I clicked on it again. You'd think it would work, but maybe not. Okay, there I saw it do something different. See, the mouse resized the cursor. That means it knows now. It knows now, okay? It's in the program. It took a long time, so maybe it was just because I just need, just perhaps to focus even took a long time. It's still not doing it. I'm still waiting. Click again. But this is how, only you do it much faster, but this is how you do it. Running this Bible research program. Now I could go up here. I could change to the, there it is, it worked. Okay, now it's, now it should highlight, I think, or focus. I mean, it should pop up. No, it's not. Strange, okay. I'm gonna look at, let's get a different translation here. Well, there it is. It recognized that I clicked on it and it gave me the meaning to cut off. Karas. That's the word I was looking for that I wanted to actually talk about too. After 62 weeks, the Messiah would be cut off. So after, it says after weeks 60 and 2, cut off. And then it's going to say Messiah or something like that. You can see it's trying to, the mouse over is working. It's popping up. It's going to take a few seconds. It's going to work. This is what you do running VirtualBox on Apple Silicon. It's very slow, but it works. Just a minute now. And this is an early beta version. Maybe they can make it faster. Maybe a lot faster. I hope so, because I'd like to run it. But anyway, look at this. Anointed. It said anointed. So that was the word for anointed. Well, it's just Messiah. You see that? M-S-I-H. Messiah. That's Messiah. That's the M. And there's the Sh. Messiah. That's the I, this letter. That's S-H. We already saw that with the 60. Or S. It's S or S-H, depending on what the points are to do with it. But MSI, and then the A is never written explicitly, or usually not, except at the beginning of a word like there it was, for after, but for Akar. But here, as a vowel, A is not written. The vowels aren't usually written. So the I here is a vowel, though, but the A is not written. This is more like a Y. It's not technically a vowel. Maybe that's why it's written, whatever. But Messiah, and then the H is written, or the CH. Meshiach. Messiah, because that was CH. We saw that before from Akar up here. This is CH. That's CH. So Meshiach, Messiah. After the 62 weeks, the Messiah would be cut off. That's what it's saying. Cut off the Messiah. But the word for cut off, karath, the interesting thing about this word is it means not only to destroy or consume, but to covenant. It means to covenant. So that's why we could have the 62 weeks from 458 BCE, and 62 weeks is 434 years. 62 times 7 is 434. 7 times 60 is 420, and 7 times 2 is 14. So you have 14 plus 420 is 434. Those 434 years from 458, 458 minus 434, right. Oh, wait a minute. No, we can. Well, that would bring us to 24 BCE. 58 minus 34 is 24. So, but the thing is, the middle of the week is when these things happened. because it mentioned in verse 27, at the half of the week, he will cause sacrifice and gift offering to cease. That's in Daniel 27. We don't have the English version right here, but we could switch over to that, right? We could probably easily switch to that, but don't know if we should try and do too much because it's so slow. But we can. Let's see. Let's do the literal version. I think this is J.P. Green. Okay. Now, if we go, yeah, he shall confirm a covenant with the many. Oops. What happened? I clicked on a reference on the side. Can I go back? Oh, it's probably got a history here. I clicked on one of these references by accident. But it's simple enough. We just go to Daniel 9. But normally these letters are bigger and you can read them. And also, normally, the program runs much faster because you're running it on a platform for which it was designed. I'm just too cheap to pay for the Mac OS version of this program, which costs about $12 or something. I'm not going to start paying for software because if I start paying for it, it's going to be hopeless. You know, I'll never stop paying for software if I start paying for it. So I can't start. I mean, I used to pay for Windows. Back when I ran Windows, I paid for all the software back then. But as soon as I started running Mac OS, I decided I'm not going to pay for software anymore. So there it is. In the middle of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the offering to cease. So that's why we count from the middle of the week. We take the middle of the week starting in 458, and that's 454 or 455 or whatever you want to take it as, but it's close enough, 454. Minus 434, that's just 20, which is the year when Herod began to rebuild the temple. But that's when... let's see. After 62 weeks. Yeah, after 62 weeks, the Messiah shall be cut off. Right? Which meant also that he would covenant. He would make a covenant, not just be cut off. So, after those 62 weeks comes the rebuilding of the temple by Herod and also the birth of the Messiah in 6 BCE as well. How did we get to that? Let me think. Yeah. Well, we have 20. That's interesting. Also, in the middle of the week, he shall cause sacrifice and offering to cease. That could imply maybe with the birth of Christ. There was with the birth of Christ, that was in the middle of that period of 7 weeks. The 7 weeks from 20, which is 49 years, 7 times 7 is 49. The 49 years from 20 BCE until 30 CE, that's 49 years because there's no zero year. That's 49 years. So in the middle of that seven sevens, which is another week of, it's 49. So it's 7 times 7. It's a week. Somewhere in the middle of that week, he's born in 6 BCE. He's born. And that's in the, you know, it's not at the beginning or end of it. It's in the middle somewhere. So that's when he starts to make a covenant, and that's when he does make a covenant before his death with his followers and so on. All these things happen in the middle of that week. But in the middle of the week, he causes the sacrifice and the offering to cease because he becomes, he is the Messiah, right? So during this period of 49 weeks, in the middle of that period, Jesus is causing the sacrifice and offering to cease. He's even seemingly violating the Sabbath, doing things that would be against the law of the Jews. But because he himself is going to abolish the law, none of what he does is wrong or is a violation. But he's causing the, essentially, not just the sacrifice and offering, but all of the law to cease. That's just symbolic. The sacrifice and offering is symbolic of the law. The idea of which was contained in the law, the idea of sacrificing animals for sins, that for which Jesus was the replacement. He was the sacrifice. But all of these things we can see from that we can gather here. Now, it was not just 62 weeks. There was 7 weeks talked about here. If we go back, it's going to take sometimes it might take seemingly a miracle for this to work, because this program's so slow. There it is, 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Daniel 9:25. 7 weeks and 62 weeks. From the word to restore and rebuild Jerusalem to Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks. Right? So, but there's also 62 weeks. From the time of Ezra in 458 BCE, which is the seventh year of Artaxerxes, with his more or less conventional viewpoint, year one, as 464 BCE, that's the conventional year one by the vast majority of the mainstream world, or the conventional world, for the year one of Artaxerxes, 464, so therefore his year seven, which is talked about as the year that Ezra went up to Jerusalem to reestablish the priesthood, that's 458, year 7, starting in 464, because it's 6 years, and then the year 7 starts. 464 minus 6 is 458. So Ezra goes up in year 7. It's another 7 for some reason, but he goes up in year 7 of Artaxerxes. And that's 458, which is the beginning of this going forth of the word. And from this time, that from the going forth of the word to restore and rebuild Jerusalem in 458, there would be 7 and 62. And that's a total of 69 weeks, right? Which is part of the 70 weeks talked about in Daniel 9:24. But let's first of all deal with the 69. 70 weeks is 70 times 7, which is 490. 490. 490 minus 7 would be 69 weeks, and that's 483 weeks. 483 weeks, subtract 457 from 483, and we get 457 plus 33 is 490, right? So as far as from the 70 weeks, so yeah, let's do it with the 70 weeks. From 490 minus 457, because there's no zero year, so we can't subtract 458. We can only subtract 457. 457 plus 33 is 490, and that's the 70 weeks. So the 70 weeks end in 33 of the common era. And they begin in the year 458 of before the common era, the years before the common era. So, and that's Artaxerxes year 7 when Ezra goes up to Jerusalem. Now that's one way to calculate it. That's the way that seems the simplest, but there are other ways to arrive at the same thing, essentially exactly the same thing, but using different methods of, for example, in some chronologies, 454 BCE is year 20 of Artaxerxes, and in that year, Nehemiah was sent to Jerusalem to rebuild the city. So there's another thing that can fit that prophecy, depending on what year you believe Artaxerxes had his year one, but it can fit in either case, is the point. The other thing that is interesting here, is very interesting here, that there are actually 7 weeks from the time that Herod wanted to rebuild the temple in 20. There's 49 years or 7 weeks of years from 20 BCE until the crucifixion in 30, because there's no 0 year. Year 20 and 30 is 50, but minus one because there's no 0 year, that's 49 years from the rebuilding of the temple by Herod, the commencement of that until the crucifixion. So during this time, all these things fit perfectly well. It sounds like the 7 weeks are at the start and then the 62 weeks, but you can count backwards. You can count backwards from the crucifixion, 7 weeks, and then count 62 weeks back from that, and you can arrive at the same place, 458. So going this way, the interesting thing here, he shall confirm the covenant for the many for 1 week. So the Jews would remain in their covenant relationship with Jehovah. That was a covenant referred to here, not the old law covenant, because he did away with the law covenant in the middle of the week, as it says here in Daniel 9:27. In the middle of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the offering to cease. This is the translation by J.P. Green. If we look at this Bible at the top, this is eSword, the program. If you get eSword, it's free on Windows. You can get it for free. This is information on the Bible translation that we're reading. It says it's the literal translation by J.P. Green, Senior. Okay, can we close that window? Or are you down here? Okay. So, in the middle of the week, which is the year of the crucifixion, Jesus causes sacrifice and offering to cease. That's logical because when he provides his sacrifice, that causes the other sacrifices to cease. That's the middle of the weeks, and that's 30 CE, as we determined by many other ways, including Orosius saying that the crucifixion was in the 17th year of Tiberius, which, counting from 14, 14 plus 17 is 31, minus 1 is 30. So it's the 17th year of Tiberius, according to Orosius. Also, that's counting Tiberius from his first year of sole rule. But it was also stated that John came baptizing and Jesus was baptized in that same year, in the 15th year of Tiberius, but that's counting from the, was it the 15th year of Tiberius? Wait a minute. Yeah, that's talking about the baptism, 15th year from 12 of the Common Era, which is the year that Tiberius began to co-rule with his father, or with his predecessor, I should say. I'm not sure if he was his father or not. Augustus, his predecessor. But 12 plus 15 is 26. It's actually 27, right? Minus one because it's the 15th again. So we get 26 for the baptismal year. It's just that those two sources, one of them being Luke, the 15th year of Tiberius being in the book of Luke, and the 17th year from Orosius, both of those were different sources. They were di from different sources, so they used different year ones for Tiberius, because Tiberius had a year when he began to co-rule, and also he had a sole rule as well. But both of them coincide with the year 30 as the crucifixion year, so it fits perfectly well. And then the covenant would continue after the crucifixion for the rest of that week. And that was at the end of that week in 33 CE, was when the nations were brought in, when Peter said, "For a certainty I perceive that God is not partial, but in every nation the man that fears him and works righteousness is acceptable to him," in Acts 10 and 34, right? I remember that from yesterday, and you probably do too. That's ex the explanation of what I was trying to explain yesterday. So let's finish with that, and let's get on with something else here. I want to do some Oscar Peterson first here. We want to get the part three. We did, there's the brain man. Oh, there's a brain man. The brain, let's talk about the brain man. I didn't even mean to do this first. But the brain man, you may want to watch this video, because it's really, really extraordinary, about a person, a man, who had an extraordinary ability to calculate things. mathematically. So that's 48 minutes long, roughly. But let's go to, and let's call it Brain Man, the boy with the incredible brain in YouTube, on YouTube. But then when we did Oscar Peterson yesterday, his interview with Andre Previn, we actually did the first two parts because I didn't realize it jumped into the second part. We've done the first two parts. So this is part three of that interview with Andre Previn.
Instant.
Yeah.
Instant. I was in a piano party, not to dwell on this, but I can remember once, you know, we used to have piano parties where all the pianists would take shots at each other, as I said, like gunfighters. And I can remember being at this piano party, and there were a couple of interlopers. There were a few bass players like Red Calendar, Ray Brown, you know, Diversified. And Art was in the kitchen, and it was noon, and he was having a beer or something. And he always, I remember he always turned away from wherever the music was. If you were playing here, Art would never listen like this. He would, you know, turned away like this. And all the pianists, the various pianists that had that kind of nerve, I didn't, but they, you know, they'd say, hey, Art, listen to this, and they'd rattle off something, you know, of his or something that they thought would impress him. And he'd say, all right, I hear you. And he came in finally, wiped out all the piano players right away, you know, sat down, wiped out all the piano players, he used to say T for two. And then he called for the bass players, and he proceeded to go through, I think there were four basses there, and he went through all four of them, you know, because he started the harmonic thing, the movement with the T for, you know, the sound. You know, one of those. And of course, I saw, I think Red Calendar made, well, he went the simple way, so he made a chorus. He got through a chorus.
Played one bar, huh?
Red Calendar went straight down the road, as you say, one note to the bar. Yeah. That was it. He can't be wrong. He lasted a chorus and finally called Ray over. He said, all right, Ray Brown, come on over here. And he came over and he played T for two. And Ray lasted, I think, like eight bars, you know. And he was just that kind of a talent. I don't think we'll, I'm sure we won't ever see that again.
Well, I must say, I always like to hear him play all alone, you know, not with, and that's, I must say, that's why I get such a kick hearing you play all alone. Not that I don't adore the trios, but it's terrific when you play.
Can you imagine being in a group with Art Tatum?
No. No, it's difficult for me to imagine being in a room with Art Tatum. Never mind. I tell you, one of the influences, I mean, the whole thing about Tatum, actually, any pianist that plays jazz who has any kind of facility is going to be influenced by Tatum one way or the other. But the thing that I hear in your playing sometimes, in terms of the kind of time you keep, is Nat Cole. Is that possible?
That's my man. Yeah, I think Nat Cole, really, to me, Nat Cole was, his real genius as a pianist was smothered, so to speak, overshadowed by his great singing, which you can't negate his singing, but selfishly, I was for the piano. Nat Cole, to me, set the trends for a lot of the piano groups. And I think the one thing that he had was infallible time. You know, Nat could play, well, he played figures over and over again. I used them. I learned that technique when I had trios, and, you know, there are nights you get up in the stand and the time is like, you know.
Yes.
So, but, I mean, you know, I have nights like that. But Nat would take a figure. That sort of thing. And I used to call them stabilizers. You know, it's the type of thing where no matter what you're doing wrong, you have to shape up right away because it takes hold of you. You know, he had such a great sensitivity for time. He also had, I found that very, very lyrical in his playing. You know?
Oh, well, I mean, for instance, on one of your very, I think it may have even been your last album, you did a thing called Easy Listening Blues, which I asked you about. And that's the thing that Nat made all those years ago.
He made that with the original trio, or one of the original trios.
Moore.
Right. And it's a very simple blues. I've been inadvertently from time to time not really teaching, but advising and holding seminars for pianists. And we had a school, of course, one time. And whenever the pianist used to come to me and say, like, how do I come up with this thing you call invention or improvisation or, you know, whatever, whether linear or harmonic, I used to send them to listen to Nat Cole records. Nat Cole and Lester Young, because the simplicity of the lines, if you can't eventually, first of all, if it doesn't reach you, you're in trouble. But if it does reach you, and if you can't come up with that in some way, shape, or form, you're not going
to
play.
Well, the big trick with Matt, I always thought, was that he not only knew what to play, but he knew what to leave out.
To leave out. This was the big thing. He'd have tremendous spaces in his playing.
That's why I love Basie's play.
Oh, it's beautiful. The master of that, you know. Yes. Basie is, Basie, to me, again, a very underrated pianist. Mm. I remember one night last year on our European tour that I made the big mistake, you know, in the flurry and furor of playing my set. Before I knew it, I went into this, you know. Now, you don't do that if you're on tour with Basie, right? and the set was going well, and I was, you know, kibitzing around with Niels and Joe and so forth, and saying, yeah, this, that, and the other. And I launched into this, and I remember Niels saying, no, and it was too late, I was into it. And I came off, and Basie, you know, I love him anyway. I came out and Basie looked at me and he said, mm-hmm. You know, and I said, Basie, you know, I didn't need some, And honest to God, Andre, he went on with the band afterwards, right? And I, you know, I always did as much as I could listen to him because, you know, you can't get enough of that. And the band played in 3-4 tunes and suddenly Basie just, you know, almost had him one of these.
Yeah.
And you know, before he got through like about three choruses, he wasted my whole set that went on before. You know, he really did, because I was standing back there and on top of that, he really got into playing the piano. You know, he just didn't go through that bit. Yeah, right. And people, I don't think too many people really realize how much piano Bill Basie can really play. I mean, he can, as we say, he can really smoke if he decides to. You know, once in a while, he'll go for it. I saw him do this in Toronto when the band was visiting once. He had a huge room that must have held about 1,000 people in this nightclub, and that's difficult, I don't care if you have two big bands. Mm. And the band had finished one of those things like Red Bank Boogie, one of the real shouters, and Basie started one of these. And the band had just finished the thing, and so, of course, you know, there's so much tension. And the minute the band finished, everybody stood up and applauded, and then they sat down and, some, you know, passed me my drink, and they're lighting cigarettes, and the bustle is going on. And Basie was sitting there going like this.
Yeah. Well, he was busy.
Right?
Yeah.
And before that tune got into the third or fourth chorus, that room was at a complete standstill. Everyone was like, you know, or patting their feet mildly, you know.
I love when he brings the band in. He's got a kind of a look that brings
the band
in.
Oh, the look?
Knocks
yeah,
me
I mean,
out.
That's yeah. the one I like. When he's playing, he goes like, you know, he says. That's lovely. I really love it.
Listen. We've done imitations now for a
That's
while.
Right.
Yeah, just play something. Just don't make me have a nice graceful lead in. Just let me sit here and hear you play.
That was part three. Yeah, that's part three of that interview, Oscar Peterson with Andre Previn. Yeah, I wanted to mention. I saw recently a few of several videos that I thought were really enjoyable and really well done, and that was Ellen's new video with Hovak. It's really both of them. It seems like they're working together for almost the first time I've ever seen them working together so well. That was really good, though. But see, and I've done this sort of room wall siding on, you know, what do we call that? Wall sheathing or siding in a room on a wall. I've done some of that in the past. So I could relate to that. But of course, there's a lot of work goes into interior design, you know, that's a lot of work. I'm not sure which is more difficult, interior or, you know, interior design or actually, you know, exterior construction or, you know, any of it. I'm not sure which is easier. I know interior design is extremely difficult because you're limited by space. That's the thing. Which, when you're not really limited by space when you're building a structure on the outside, you're just building it. You don't have to worry. You hopefully have already figured out how much space you need on the inside, but you just don't have the... That is not really... You're designing it from, in a sense, from the outside in. And then when you're doing interior design, you're at least build it from the outside in. But that's different. But that's the exterior construction. When you build from the inside, interior design, you're building from the inside out. From the inside in, in a sense, you're limited in many ways. You have to make things fit in the room, which is in some ways the most difficult thing of all. But anyway, I also really enjoyed not mentioning these in any particular order or anything. And I'm gonna leave people out. As, you know, I'm not gonna mention everything I've watched. But and some things I'm not gonna watch. Probably I won't watch everything, you know. But what was I gonna say? I'm busy though. That's good. I'm busy, and I need to restrict myself in terms of how much. If someone's very charismatic, I may not be able to watch their videos because I can't retain my own momentum. It's not so much. It's also my personality. I can't maintain that either, but it's the momentum I can't maintain if I can't do research. I need to be able to do a lot of research all the time. But I enjoyed it was just strange. Why I enjoyed it, I'm not sure. I think it was because of the 3D printing. I enjoyed Luke Miani's new video with 3D printing. That was interesting. And it was interesting that he didn't have to destroy his existing computer to do that, because he found a fortuitous circumstance, you know, where he could use a part that plugged in correctly with the correct connector. That was very interesting. That thing was... it reminded me of the things I used to build and design and build when I was very, very young. You know, like, that's the kind of thing I would have been interested in. Back then, we didn't have video games. I would have invented my own games. And we did invent our own games. We used baseball cards and hockey cards, and we invented games using the cards. Sometimes we'd use the numbers on the cards, or other times we would spin a top which had, you know, numbers on it or answers on it or something, whatever it was. I think we had a baseball top. We'd spin it. It would say home run or single, double, triple, you know, strikeout or whatever. Strike, maybe. What was it? Strikeout, maybe. Yeah. I don't think it had room for strikes. And I don't think we had to go through one strike at a time. It was just you strike out or you get a hit. On this top, it was like a six-sided or eight-sided top where you'd spin it. But we used to invent our own games. We didn't have computers. We didn't have phones. Can you imagine that? We didn't have iPads. Didn't have anything. No computers back then. Nothing. TV was about as advanced as the technology was back then. And video, you know, recorders were pretty impossible. You know, they hadn't arrived yet, except for the very big studios. And, you know, except for a television station would have video recorders, obviously, and things like that. You know, but we didn't have them as private individuals. I don't think we did we? I'm trying to think. Well, we certainly, there was no, I can't remember anything like that. No renting of any movies, nothing. No video players of any kind. But anyway, there may have been something, but certainly not where I was living in the small town either. Wouldn't have been there in the 1960s and 70s when I was growing up. But the other video, no, I wanted to mention Max's video on Max Tech. That was another one that really I could really relate to it. You know, I could really relate to it, and but it was also he was trying to, it was forward thinking. He was trying to think about, and he really nailed it with he analyzed Apple as a company and said, this is what Apple's like, this is what they like, and this is what they don't like. They don't like to be told what to do, and they do like to be, you know, making money and independent and all the, you know, these things, which is very true. And whether, I mean, I think that there were, he was making very specific sort of predictions, or, you know, possible, you know, predictions of possible events that could happen, that things that forecasting what Apple could do, which is a it was very insightful. It was very, I don't know how accurate it's going to be, because if Apple hears about it, of course they'll try to make it something different. They'll try to cause something different to happen. But I mean, the thing is, yeah, it's, but technology trends that that we can see, like I'm wondering, when is quantum computing coming and things like that? You know, I don't know that that's very near or close, you know, to being a reality yet, but I mean, that could come at any moment too. This quantum computing could be arriving any time. I think the VR is coming, right? I heard about that also on Luke and Noah's podcast, where they talked about that. That was a really what's the word? It was a very much more technical podcast, shall we say, or a podcast where the conversation was, no, it was more specifically about what Apple's going to come out with next, and that, or the things that Apple's already come out, was about Apple. That podcast was about Apple, a lot about Apple. And so the VR and the new glasses that are coming, the augmented reality that's coming with the new glasses that are coming, that is fascinating and interesting to me, of course. I mean, I wear glasses, so that's really, really significant to me. If Apple comes out with something that can be a wearable computer that's also, it can correct your vision potentially too, those sorts of things. I've been watching a lot of videos though of a lot of different, I want to expand my video watching too. I have to watch many different types of subject matter as well. But no, I thought Max's video, I wanted to talk about that because I thought it was, I mean, Max always kind of makes it emotional, where it's, he's so heartbroken by what Apple's doing, and you can feel it, and he really seems to understand it in a way that very few people do, in terms of, I think that's one of the benefits of you know, having the correct priorities in life with regard to your beliefs and your teachings. That's what I think it has to do with being able to see and cut to the chase. And I'm not going to try to dilute things by mentioning too many people, you know, all in the same breath. I just think that was another video that, like the other one that I saw, Am I Wrong, was his video before. This video was really against, or not, you know, very, very an accurate assessment of Apple and what Apple's doing, which is, you know, in some ways it was a negative review of Apple too, in some ways. But we know Apple, I think there was a part that he missed, the part that He thinks he said he was trapped in the apple ecosystem, and he explained why he thought he was trapped in the apple ecosystem. But I don't view it that way, as being trapped, because I see that there's no real alternative. There's no real trap, because there's no alternative to the apple ecosystem. Apple is the best at what they do. And they may not. His point was they're not updating everything. They're not giving the best features and the highest transfer rates, and they're doing it because they can make more money doing it the way they're doing it, by holding features back. And I'm not convinced that that's why they do it either. I think it's better to not change things. Not changing something is an advantage. And to keep using, reusing the same technology is a good thing. It simplifies a lot of manufacturing and a lot of the learning curves. Everything becomes simpler when you can reuse the technology and not have to upgrade all the time. So I understand the positive side, the plus side of this, the positive version of the story of why Apple doesn't upgrade everything. You know, I see it's not just profit motive. It's not just profit motive. I think that's a little bit of a cynical view, but I think it's still a very valuable viewpoint. I see. I didn't understand that viewpoint. Never would have seen it or understood it if it hadn't been pointed out to me. So that's why I appreciated that video. Was it was so cutting. It was so pointedly, you know, pointing out Apple's failings, and you know, without any, you know, bias, apparently very little bias in favor of Apple, despite the fact that we know you use Apple products, Max, so, I mean, it's we know you're not, you know, completely, you can't be completely against them. By necessity, you can't. You just can't be. But anyway, I mean, it's shocking to me. It was shockingly good, though. Like, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, so let's get to our next topic here. This is a short psalm, Psalm 39. To the director of Jeduthun, let's consider this now, little children. And I thought, coming back to the Ellen and Hoback video, I thought Ellen was really good in this video, too. I really did. Looks really good too. You look amazing, Ellen. So anyway, little children, let's pray about this psalm here, Psalm 39, and the rest of the scriptures that we might study today. Jehovah, please, if you would be so kind as to give us a portion of your Holy Spirit that we could be better at studying this material. In Jesus' name, amen. So I like to keep the prayers a little bit short sometimes, especially when we don't have much time. We're running out of time here already. To the director of Jeduthun, I'm not going to get much done today, but yesterday, by the way, I didn't go outside to work yesterday, but I went shopping yesterday. So then it was nearly dark. I thought I won't go out and try and work because, of course, the clocks have changed. We've fallen back an hour, and we're now in Eastern Standard Time here where I live, and so we don't have as much daylight now, so I'm not going to be able to go out unless I go out at 3 o'clock. Basically, I have to go out or earlier. It's already after three now. I mean, it's already, you know, I may not go out again today. But what's the weather like before we start? It's cold, cold. Tomorrow looks like another good day though, and then possibly rain, and then maybe some more great days, but colder. That's good. So there may be still lots of time to work. But yesterday I could have used a day off, and I got another day off, except that grocery shopping is lots of exercise. So, you know, carrying heavy bins up the stairs and stuff like that. Psalm 39, I said, I will guard my ways to keep from sinning with my tongue. I will set a muzzle as a guard to my own mouth, as long as anyone wicked is in front of me. I became speechless with silence. I kept quiet from what is good. And my being pained was ostracized. My heart grew hot inside me. During my sighing, the fire kept burning. I spoke with my tongue. Cause me, O Jehovah, to know my end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how transient I am. Look, you have made my days just a few, and my life's duration is as nothing in front of you. Surely every earthling man, though standing firm, is nothing but an exhalation. Selah. Surely in a semblance man walks about. Surely they are boisterous in vain. One piles up things and does not know who will be gathering them. And now, for what have I hoped, O Jehovah? My expectation is toward you. From all my transgressions, deliver me. Do not set me as a reproach of the senseless one. I kept speechless. I could not open my mouth, for you yourself acted. Remove from off me your plague. Due to the hostility of your hand, I myself have come to an end. By reproofs against error, you have corrected man, and you consume his desirable things, just as a moth does. Surely every earthling man is an exhalation. Selah. Do hear my prayer, O Jehovah, and to my cry for help do give ear. At my tears do not keep silent, for I am but an alien resident with you, a settler the same as all my forefathers. Look away from me, that I may brighten up before I go away, and I am not. That is a very short but very potent psalm. It contains these ideas. The idea that Jehovah actually is, does he really do that? Does he consume the desirable things of man, like a moth consumes things, by punishing men? Is that how he does it? By punishing us when we do wrong? By just through the natural laws of the universe that impact us when we do things wrong, like when we trip, we fall, because gravity, you know, impacts us in that way. You know, the things that happen to us because of just natural laws, even, of the universe that Jehovah created. Reproofs against error. But when we eat the wrong food, right? We don't get our health working the way it should. I wanted to talk, I have so much to say about that, too. But I don't think today is the day to talk about that. But the fact that vitamin C does in fact cure infections, when you take enough of it, and you can't do it by eating food. That's the point that I don't think should be missed. You can't just eat food rich in vitamin C. I mean, unless the vitamin C level is as high as you can get by eating 2 grams of vitamin C every hour. But the problem is you don't want all the sugar. You know, you don't want to have to eat fructose. You don't want fructose because fructose is something that causes weight gain. So you don't want to eat. It's not as good for us as the other sugars. We don't want to eat sugar at all, though. Period. But there are natural sugars in milk. It has lactose. And dairy products have lactose, unless they're lactose free. That's a sugar, lactose. So I mean, we're not supposed to avoid all sugar. But I think my problem has been with eating a lot of dairy. I've been getting a lot of lactose. And that's what prevents me losing weight, too. There is a need to have some sugar in the form of natural sugar like that. But real, I mean, not, but that's, yeah. The thing we call sugar that is real sugar in the sense of man-made sugar, processed sugar, is bad for us. That sugar is bad because it's not a real food. It's too concentrated as sugar, right? There's no food with it. Nothing else with it. It's dangerous. Even if you add it to something, it's just dangerous to add it to your food because it's not a natural thing. It's very dangerous because it spikes your blood sugar and all these, you know, all of that. It's just bad. very bad. Leads to diabetes, all kinds of things. But there are a lot of foods that are good or bad to a greater or lesser degree, right? But that's just one way we get punished, just by the food that we eat. But look at this. Look away from me, that I may brighten up before I go away, and I am not. That's amazing. And also, his years, he says, are very few, right? His days are very few. Is as nothing, verse 5, my life's duration is as nothing in front of you, speaking to Jehovah. You have made my days just a few. But, you know, David's asking that he may know how transient he is in verse 4. Cause me to know my end and the measure of my days. He wanted to know how transient he was. That's a very, very different concept from what we see in the world. We don't see a lot of people wanting to know how transient they are. They want to know how powerful, great, and wonderful they are, and how long they're going to live, or how we're all like that. We all tend to be less humble than this. I mean, less thoughtful than this. David's thoughtful about his life, his duration of life. He's thoughtful about it. He's thinking about, he knows how short his life really is from Jehovah's standpoint. It's such an incredible psalm from that viewpoint. I think it's incredible. It's extremely eye-opening to me to see that psalm, you know, contrasted with all the previous ones and everything we've been learning from the Bible and so on. It's because we've been talking about everlasting life, John 17:3. This means everlasting life, but yet David is saying, cause me to know how transient I am. It's the opposite, right? So the Bible has all the different viewpoints. They're all in there. It's amazing. I love that psalm for that reason. That's incredible. What's this now? 25 verses. Can we do it? We can do it. We're not going to get to John, I don't think. But I think maybe we should talk a bit about something else. But maybe we should read this, though, because I think we have a need for spiritual things, right? Let's read it. The pronouncement against Egypt. Oh, against Egypt now was Damascus, remember? Before that, we had Babylon. We had Moab. We had different things. Moab, and then Babylon, then Moab, then Damascus, and we had Jehovah's people too. They were pronounced against, and now we have against Egypt. Look, Jehovah is riding on a swift cloud and coming into Egypt, and the valueless gods of Egypt will certainly quiver because of him, and the very heart of Egypt will melt in the midst of it. And I will goad Egyptians against Egyptians, and they will certainly war, each one against his brother, and each one against his companion, city against city, kingdom against kingdom. And the spirit of Egypt must become bewildered in the midst of it, and I shall confuse its own counsel. And they will be certain to resort to the valueless gods and to the charmers and to the spirit mediums and to the professional foretellers of events. And I will deliver up Egypt into the hand of a hard master, and strong will be the king that will rule over them, is the utterance of the true Lord, Jehovah of armies. And the water will certainly be dried up from the sea, and the river itself will become parched and actually run dry. And the rivers must stink. The Nile canals of Egypt must become low and parched. The reed and the rush themselves must molder. The bare places by the Nile River, at the mouth of the Nile River, and every seed land of the Nile River will dry up. It will certainly be driven away, and it will be no more. And the fishers will have to mourn, and all those casting fish hooks into the Nile River must express sorrow, and even those spreading fish nets upon the surface of the water will actually fade away. And the workers in carded flax must become ashamed, also the loom workers on white fabrics. And her weavers must become crushed, all the wage workers grieved in soul. The princes of Zoan are indeed foolish. As regards the wise ones of Pharaoh's counselors, their counsel is something unreasonable. How will you men say to Pharaoh, I am the son of wise ones, the son of kings of ancient time? Where then are they, the wise men of yours, that they may now tell you, and that they may know what Jehovah of armies has counseled concerning Egypt? The princes of Zoan have acted foolishly. The princes of Noph have been deceived. The key men of her tribes have caused Egypt to wander about. Jehovah himself has mingled in the midst of her the spirit of disconcertedness, and they have caused Egypt to wander about in all its work, just as someone drunk is made to wander about in his vomit. And Egypt will not come to have any work that the head or the tail, the shoot or the rush, can do. In that day, Egypt will become like women, and it will certainly tremble and be in dread because of the waving of the hand of Jehovah of armies, which he is waving against it. And the ground of Judah must become to Egypt a cause for reeling. Everybody to whom one mentions it is in dread because of the counsel of Jehovah of armies that he is counseling against him. In that day there will prove to be five cities in the land of Egypt speaking the language of Canaan and swearing to Jehovah of armies. The city of tearing down will one city be called. In that day there will prove to be an altar to Jehovah in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar to Jehovah beside its boundary. And it must prove to be for a sign and for a witness to Jehovah of armies in the land of Egypt. For they will cry out to Jehovah because of the oppressors, and he will send them a savior, even a grand one, who will actually deliver them. And Jehovah will certainly become known to the Egyptians, and the Egyptians must know Jehovah in that day, and they must render sacrifice and gift and must make a vow to Jehovah and pay it. And Jehovah will certainly deal Egypt a blow. There will be a dealing of a blow and a healing, and they must return to Jehovah, and he must let himself be entreated by them and must heal them. In that day there will come to be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and Assyria will actually come into Egypt, and Egypt into Assyria, and they will certainly render service, Egypt with Assyria. In that day Israel will come to be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, namely a blessing in the midst of the earth, because Jehovah of armies will have blessed it, saying, "Blessed be my people Egypt, and the work of my hands Assyria, and my inheritance Israel." Isaiah 19, which is a rather strange chapter in Isaiah, similar to the strange psalm that we just had also, where Isaiah is now talking about how Babylon and Assyria are, or not Babylon, Egypt and Assyria are Jehovah's people, along with Israel. Although Israel is his inheritance, of course, and Assyria the work of his hands. He defines them differently. His people, Egypt, the work of his hands, Assyria, and his inheritance, Israel. Well, that's something to retain, that we might retain from that. From that whole chapter is that last verse. So we have very little time left. I think we need this spiritual food, this instruction, that just as a backdrop to give us something against which to live our daily lives, the rest of our day. And I really enjoyed, there was a lot of detail that Hovac gave in the video that he made with Ellen of their new studio, or their makeover of the studio. But it was very generous. All the information was very detailed, a lot of information. Okay, at that time, Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. Yeah, at that time, in the book of John, chapter 19, Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. We're not going to get through this in 6 minutes, are we? 40? 41? Well, maybe. And the soldiers braided a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him with a purple outer garment. And they began coming up to him and saying, "Good day, you King of the Jews." Also, they would give him slaps in the face. And Pilate went outside again and said to them, "See, bring him outside to you in order for you to know I find no fault in him." Accordingly, Jesus came outside wearing the thorny crown and the purple outer garment. And he said to them, "Look, the man." However, when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they shouted, saying, "Impale him, impale him." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and impale him, for I do not find any fault in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to the law he ought to die because he made himself God's son. When therefore Pilate heard this saying, he became more fearful, and he entered into the governor's palace again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. And Pilate said to him, "Are you not speaking to you? Do you not know I have authority to release you and I have authority to impale you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority at all against me unless it had been granted to you from above. This is why the man that handed me over to you has greater sin." For this reason, Pilate kept on seeking how to release him. How to release him. But the Jews shouted, saying, "If you release this man, you are not a friend of Caesar. Every man making himself a king speaks against Caesar." Therefore Pilate, after hearing these words, brought Jesus outside, and he sat down on a judgment seat in a place called the Stone Pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "See, your king." However, they shouted, "Take him away! Take him away! Impale him!" Pilate said to them, "Shall I impale your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." At that time, therefore, he handed him over to them to be impaled. Then they took charge of Jesus, and bearing the torture stake for himself, he went out to the so-called skull place, which is called Golgotha in Hebrew, and there they impaled him, and two other men with him, one on this side and one on that, but Jesus in the middle. Pilate wrote a title also and put it on the torture stake. It was written, "Jesus the Nazarene, the King of the Jews." Therefore, many of the Jews read this title because the place where Jesus was impaled was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, in Latin, and Greek. However, the chief priests of the Jews began to say to Pilate, "Do not write the King of the Jews, but that he said, 'I am King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." Now when the soldiers had impaled Jesus, they took his outer garments and made four parts for each soldier, a part and the inner garment, but the inner garment was without a seam, being woven from the top through its length. Therefore they said to one another, "Let us not tear it, but let us determine by lots over it whose it will be." This was that the scripture might be fulfilled, "They apportioned my outer garments among themselves, and upon my apparel they cast lots." And so the soldiers really did these things. By the torture stake of Jesus, however, there were standing his mother and the sister of his mother, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. Therefore Jesus, seeing his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, said to his mother, "Woman, see your son." Next he said to the disciple, "See your mother." And from that hour on, the disciple took her to his home. After this, when Jesus knew that by now all things had been accomplished, in order that the scripture might be accomplished, he said, "I am thirsty." A vessel was sitting there full of sour wine. Therefore they put a sponge full of the sour wine upon a hyssop stalk and brought it to his mouth. When now he had received the sour wine, Jesus said, "It has been accomplished." And bowing his head, he delivered up his spirit. Then the Jews, since it was preparation, in order that the bodies might not remain upon the torture stakes on the Sabbath, for the day of that Sabbath was a great one, requested Pilate to have their legs broken and the bodies taken away. The soldiers came, therefore, and broke the legs of the first man and those of the other man that had been impaled with him. But on coming to Jesus, as they saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. Yet one of the soldiers jabbed his side with a spear, and immediately blood and water came out. And he that has seen it has borne witness, and his witness is true, and that man knows he tells true things, in order that you also may believe. In fact, these things took place in order for the scripture to be fulfilled, "Not a bone of his will be crushed." And again, a different scripture says, "They will look to the one whom they pierced." Now after these things, Joseph from Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, but a secret one out of his fear of the Jews, requested Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus, and Pilate gave him permission. Therefore he came and took his body away. Nicodemus also, the man that came to him in the night the first time, came bringing a roll of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pounds of it. So they took the body of Jesus and bound it up with bandages with spices, just the way the Jews have the custom of preparing for burial. Incidentally, at the place where he was impaled, there was a garden, and in the garden a new memorial tomb in which no one had ever yet been laid. Therefore then, on account of the preparation of the Jews, they laid Jesus, because the memorial tomb was nearby. So we did it. We read John 19. Interesting there. He fulfilled these scriptures where it said they would not, they apportioned his garments, right? And that was fulfilled. they apportioned my outer garments among themselves, and upon my apparel they cast lots. That's, if we click on that little footnote there, it says Psalm 22 and 18. We've already read that. See that? They apportioned my garments among themselves, and upon my clothing they cast lots. So we did have that as a prophecy in Psalms. We've already read it, and it was just one example of the prophecies Jesus fulfilled, and there were a lot of those. So this is Word Green. It is November 9th, 2022, 1547 hours. Thank you for watching. I love you. Have a great day. Praise Jehovah. Welcome to the Bible study, and bye for now.